Welcome to Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr, your direct line to the designers, stylists, beauty experts, editors, and tastemakers who are shaping the ever-evolving world of fashion. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and today I am delighted to speak with the incredible designer, Tikkun Panigsoor. Tikkun is a phenomenal talent who's known for his feminine collections featuring simple lines crafted through clever construction. In 2006, Tikkun was one of three recipients of the Vogue CFDA Fashion Fund, and he was also nominated for the Swarovski Award for Best Emerging Women's Wear Designer. Since then, Tikkun has been embraced by the fashion world with fans like Sarah Jessica Parker, Sienna Miller, and Michelle Obama, who wore one of his designs during the presidential nomination at the Democratic National Convention in 2008. In addition to his role as Chief Creative Officer for Tikkun, he also runs Homegirls Magazine, that's H-O-M-M-E, Girls. His career is fascinating. Did you know that he was a former fashion editor? We get into it. And he shares some incredible stories and advice you don't want to miss. It's all coming up on Who What Wear.
Hi, Tikkun. Welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be talking about this, actually.
Good. I love this. Okay, so I'm excited to chat with you for a number of reasons. You are the most incredible designer. I own so many of your pieces.
Aww.
You are an incredible former fashion writer, which we are going to get into as well, an editor. So can you talk a little bit about how your brand has evolved over the years, all the way back to initial concept and the path to where you are today? I know, small question, right?
Exactly. I was a former fashion writer, as you mentioned. I was working in Harper's Bazaar magazine on my fourth year there, and I was covering a lot of profiles. I was going to runway shows. I was going to social events in the city, and I was traveling. The one part that I loved doing in my job was going to the studios of designers and really doing profiles on them. But then I would end up just sitting there with them, talking with them, seeing their studios, seeing that they were cutting and sewing and putting things together. And I just basically wanted to hang out with them the entire time and did not want to go back to write. So then I was like, God, okay, I'm on my fourth year. Like, I don't know if I see a path in writing. Like, I love it, but I don't love it that much. I want to start creating something. So took a couple courses at Parsons School of Design, and 6 months later, put a tiny collection of pieces together. At the time, I had made a lot of friends in fashion. I was really friendly with the fashion director at Barney's. And then I was also really friendly with the fashion features director at Vogue at the time too, Sally Singer, who I adore and still work with in a different capacity now with my magazine, Homegirls. But so basically, I had these little pieces that I made and called them up and said, what do you guys think? And they immediately said, this is great. And if you keep going, we'll do something. So I added a couple more pieces. I ended up presenting a collection of 10 looks during the summer of 2004. And everyone from Vogue came, everyone from Barney's came, and the rest is history.
I mean, but that's so wild on so many levels, because let's be honest, you had the job that everyone dreams of, or so many people dream about. And the fact that you were like, I love this, but I love something else more, and I want to take a risk and just go for it, is so cool and so brave and so interesting. So what happened from there? Because it's a big jump to go from like, oh, I've taken some classes, I've put something together, to being like a full-on business.
I was naive, but at the same time, ballsy.
Yeah.
I just said to myself, listen, like, one day at a time. I'm just literally going to wake up and the calls are going to come and it's going to tell me what I'm going to do next, you know, next day and next month. So that's what led me. So I put the presentation together. Vogue came and said, listen, you know, we love what this is. Can you take the collection up to see Anna Wintour the next day?
The next day. Were you nervous?
Completely. I mean, obviously, you know, she's a legend, but back then she was everything in fashion. So I went by myself, took four garment racks, set the pieces up in her office, waited for her to come in. She came in and she sat down at her chair and I started presenting. And I remember I had to get up because I wanted to really show her the details of the clothes. And the minute that I went to grab the first piece of clothing, I saw that my hand was shaking so much. And I just had to tell myself to just get it together, get it together. You've only got 5 minutes. And she barely said much. She said, you know, how did you get started? And I told her, what is your inspiration? And how do you see the collection unfolding? And so those were the kinds of questions that she was asking. But then at the end, she just said, thank you. And that was it.
Did you have an idea for answering those questions? Because to your point, you were young. I mean, these were the earliest of days. I wouldn't blame you for not having like a business plan or a complete vision for where you wanted it to go. So that question could have been totally scary in some ways.
I didn't. I just did everything instinctually. You know, I knew that I had a good collection because every ounce of creativity that I wanted to convey, I put into that collection. And so I was confident enough to be able to talk about the pieces down to the stitching and the lace that I got from France. Like in every part of that collection, I knew inside and out because I was the only one creating it. I didn't have any help at the time. Literally created it out of my apartment. So I didn't have any plans on how I was going to answer her, but I knew that any questions that she had, I would be able to answer. It was before Shark Tank, but I think it was a Shark Tank moment.
On a number of levels, I can completely see that. That's incredible. So obviously she was impressed because you were one of the three recipients of the Vogue CFDA Fashion Fund Award in 2006, which I remember vividly. And then I also remember that collaboration that you did with Gap. And I remember I lived in New York and worked at Elle at the time. And I remember coming home to San Diego and seeing it in stores and buying it and being so excited about it. So I'm curious if you can talk about that time a little bit, some of the moments that really are standout to you, and how everything sort of shaped the course of your career.
Yeah, so after that meeting, I think she was just the biggest champion. Like I couldn't have asked for more of a support. When she sets her sights on a designer, like she really supports him. Like I owe so much to her. But after that was when things really took like a turn upward, which was really fantastic. The CFDA came calling, asking for me to apply for the Fashion Fund, which at the time I was like, maybe I'm a little too young of a business. You know, literally it was like a year and a half or something into the business. I was still trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they encouraged me to do it. So I did. And again, like the presentation for the CFDA Fashion was a blur because there was so much going on. I ended up becoming one of the finalists, which was an amazing moment because that was when, again, went into Anna's office and she said, okay, you have a mentor and his name is Mark Lee and he is the CEO of Gucci and he's going to help you.
I mean, I'm sorry to laugh, but that's just so wild. Right. It's like modern day fairy tale, but better because it's earned.
Yes, exactly. And so she said, you know, so that's that. He's going to help you figure out your business. And I was so grateful. And then she said, like, is there something else that you want to do?
Did you have an answer prepared for that?
Yes, I did. I said, actually, the one thing that would be so cool is to be able to partner or to work with a big mainstream fashion brand, because I think that it's about bringing runway fashion or high-end fashion to the masses. And I said, working with a company like The Gap would be cool. And I don't even know if that was me or if that was already in the works, but that's how a couple of weeks later, The Gap call came through Anna's office with that collaboration. We ended up doing 3 or 4 distinct pieces for The Gap that year. And we also made the cover of Vogue. And so that to me was mind-blowing.
I mean, to put it mildly, that's just like a rocket ship to the moon.
Yep.
And I would imagine sort of beyond your wildest dreams. But it's also, I think it's important to talk about, like, on one hand, you can have all of this support and press and folks knowing your name and knowing the brand and working with an iconic brand like Gap on these collaborations, but then at the end of the day, you still have to like go home and figure out how to run a business. What were those early days like in terms of figuring that piece of it out? Because there's the design piece of it, which is clearly the part that you loved, but that's only one small part of running a business. And the other stuff can be very distracting. And you were also learning. So how were you balancing everything?
I actually graduated Boston University Business School. So I have a business degree before getting into fashion. And when I wanted to go into fashion, my mom, and she's a seamstress, she was a seamstress by trade. She said, "Are you sure? Do you want to do that? Can you make money from that?" And I kept thinking, yeah, if I own my own company, I could, right? So I think that I always knew that I wanted to run my own company, and I also wanted to be creative. And that, to me, was the epitome.
I mean, which is a really rare skill set, because usually folks are one or the other, but don't have a true comprehension, let alone fluency in both. So that's, you know, obviously setting you up for success. Plus, I can't help but think, like, with all of those profiles and all of those pieces that you wrote at Bazaar, like, you saw firsthand some of the pitfalls that people ran into and key markers for success. So on some level, like, you'd been studying, right?
I did. There are a lot of talents in New York. There are a lot of talents globally, you know, and I think that a lot of these kids have such great ideas, but it's not enough. If you want clothes on people, you really have to understand how to get there. And it's not just about draping and designing and putting it on the runway, and then that's the end of it. Like, that's actually the beginning of it. Then you take it back into the production room, and then you really figure out the numbers and, you know, like, what's your profit margin? Can you afford $100 a yard lace? There are those considerations. And I understood those considerations very early on, just because I knew that fashion design is a commercial vehicle. In order to succeed, you have to put clothes on people.
Right. It's not just a theory. So at one point in time, I was talking to Jen Meyer about the Vogue Fashion Fund process. And she was telling me a little bit about what it was like from her perspective. And I had no idea that it was so elaborate and that there was so much work. And she said it was actually really great. It's almost like getting an MBA in fashion business, because there were so many things for you to do. What was the process like for you? Did it clarify anything? Did it solidify anything? Did you discover anything? Or because you already entered it with a entrepreneurial skill set and mindset, did you feel like it was just honing things that were already there for you?
I think it was honing. I had the foundations laid. I remember at the time I knew already that the Tacoon brand was standing for a certain sensibility. And it was just about drilling into that sensibility a bit more. And I think that that's the reason why I was one of the finalists, is because I think that they saw that clearly too. And so the experience, though, was really sort of mind-blowing and really enriching, just because you're put to the test, right? Like, there are 10
Literally.
Judges. Yeah, exactly. And you're like jumping over hurdles and competition. And then you have to talk to 10 different judges from different parts of the fashion industry. And so you've got to know your game.
That is incredible. Okay, so we're going to skip ahead. We're going to go to 2017. So at this point in time, you'd been working so steadily. You'd been designing over 200 looks a year. You had incredible support from celebrities and influential people like, you know, Mrs. Obama, no big deal. And then you did something that's pretty unexpected, which is you decided to take a sabbatical for a couple of years. I feel like folks probably understand that concept now, just a few years later, in a totally different way. But what was it like at that moment? Why did you need to take that time? How did it change your perspective? And what was the reaction when you decided to do that?
Yeah, I felt like I was on a hamster wheel at the time. And my career blew up very quickly in a short amount of time. And I just felt like it was just going and going and going and going. And I kept having to feel like I needed to do more. I needed to build a business bigger. We took on a majority investor because at the time we wanted to grow the business and we wanted to open stores and we wanted to be online, you know, because online at the time too, especially for a luxury designer brand, is very important. So while I was going through all of that motion, I kept saying to myself, I'm not going to be able to output if I continue to do it this way. Like my creative mind is completely empty. I need to refuel and I need to do it in a way that's just not about 1 week here, 1 week there. And so I needed to reset. And thankfully, my investor was kind enough to say, listen, we value you. You're very important to the brand. We need you to figure it out. And it was perfect timing too, because at the time in fashion, I think there was a lot of turmoil. And so my personal creative turmoil was really in parallel with the fashion industry's turmoil, because a lot of people were trying to figure out how to get out of this rut of discounting, of wholesale business model gone awry, and the rise of e-com. At the time, there were a lot of new brands in fashion that were coming up that didn't really go through the traditional fashion system at all. And they basically all of a sudden were $50 million businesses. So I was feeling like, God, like there's just a lot of pressure from all sides. From the creative side, there was just so much to think about. From the business side, industry was changing rapidly. Our back end, our business structure was also changing. You know, we were really trying to get Tukun to be a direct-to-consumer business. We wanted to be relying less on wholesale partners, because wholesale partners at the time were really putting down rules that we just weren't happy with. So all of those factors led us to say, okay, we want to be direct-to-consumer first. And so in doing that process, we stumbled a bit and we were trying to build an infrastructure on the technology backend that really like didn't work out for us. And so it gave me the opportunity to say, okay, guys, I'm going to put my hand up and say, I'm going to step out for a second while you guys figure out the business end of it. I'm going to actually try to gain some clarity on the creative end and figure out what Tukun needs to be for this next iteration.
I love that on so many levels. I'm curious about what that time was like for you. Were you scared about walking away from it even
totally,
for a minute?
Totally.
What did you find on the other side of it? Did it go the way you expected? Was it unexpected?
It was a journey. Like it was a journey of sadness and misery and then light at the end of the tunnel. Like really,
thank goodness.
When you come up in the fashion industry with runway collections behind you, you have this feeling that if you step off of the runway, you're never going to be seen and heard from again. You know, it's almost totally. Like people are going to forget about you, right? So that's the fear that was really real. And then, you know, I said, fuck it, I'll figure it out. Like that was always my mantra, I'll figure it out. And so in the first couple of months, I just would call all of my friends, make sure that I was still connected. It's like, do you want to have lunch with me? Let's have drinks. Let's have dinner. Like I was always like trying to stay connected to everyone I knew in the industry because I didn't want to be forgotten. And then after a while, I settled into, oh, maybe I should just actually be traveling a little bit. So then I started to travel. I went to Marrakesh. I went to Cuba. I went to Mexico. I just went all over the place. And that was when things started to open up creatively. And so I saw things differently. I stepped out of the fashion bubble and I saw what the bubble was doing to people that were still in the bubble. And I was so thankful to have that opportunity to look from that perspective. Creatively, I walked away with so much. I started Homegirls, which is my magazine and passion project. That idea came to me while I was on a sabbatical. The new iteration of Tukun came to me while I was on the sabbatical. So I highly recommend it.
That's so incredible. So at the end of the sabbatical, your creative well has been replenished. You have ideas. You are feeling fresh. What was your initial plan and what was it like coming back?
So my initial plan was to just have control in the decision-making process.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have control in that process, I was going to damn sure speak my mind just to make sure that I get it out there. Because I think that that was the other thing, is to mentally have to deal with the level of confidence that you have at the seat of the table. And sometimes I felt like I didn't have that confidence in the past. And so I wanted to be sure that if I were to come back, I wanted to be happy with the way that I present things, the way that I say things, or the way that I do things. So that was first and foremost. And then I said to them, I was like, listen, you guys, like I'm not going to be productive if I'm only working on Tukun. Around 2017, 2018, we were seeing a lot of creatives sort of expanding into other realms of creativity too. They weren't just doing fashion. And if they were doing fashion, they were also collaborating with other fashion brands. And I think that we were all feeling the same thing. And for me, it was important that I wasn't just doing one project. And I wanted to kind of take on other consultancies, do other kinds of designs, and, you know, go back into magazine writing. And all of those things work together. You need different instruments to make music together. And I think that for me, I looked at it as different creative pots that I could dip my hand into that would inform me on how to design better for Tacoon, you know?
And then from the design process, obviously, there were some adjustments along the way too. So how did you think of your customer and who you wanted to reach as you evolved this iteration of Tacoon?
When we were thinking about the reset for Tacoon, I looked at the landscape and I said, the runway is a different place now. We are not where we were in 2005, 2006, when runway was just like the rage and everything distilled down from there. I think that that world has been flipped on its head. There were two kinds of fashion for me. There was fashion, capital F, as entertainment. And then there was fashion as clothes that people buy. And I think that you can participate in both, right? Like you can look at social media and you can scroll and you can see a beautiful couture runway show and you can like it, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to buy it or wear it or access it. So that to me was entertainment. What I wanted to do was fashion that was really rooted in practicality, in affecting people's lives. And so that was the mantra. That was the new manifesto that I wanted to put out there that was about considered clothing that was everyday. I mean, that sounds like every other designer before me, but they also made history. You know, Donna Karan made history, right? So I think that at the end of the day, it was really consumer facing. It was like really looking at the population and say, okay, like what can I do to better their lives as they sort of go day to day? Like our days are busier than ever, you know? And so you kind of don't want to think about clothes sometimes. You just want to put something on and feel good about it.
Which is interesting because this all happened ahead of the pandemic. And I can't help but think like most folks were not there yet. Most brands, most designers were not there yet. And now, by the way, I feel like everyone has sort of focused on that. And yes, there's still the spectacle of it all, sure. But I think that this very laser focus on the actual consumer has changed rapidly over the last few years. It's so wild to me that you were there so early. Did you feel like the rest of your team and that people in general got what you wanted to do? Or was it sometimes a little bit of a struggle getting everyone on board with the vision?
They did. I mean, I brought a lot of people back from some of the older days when I was doing shows. And I said, you know, we're doing something completely different. Can you get on board? And, you know, some people would get on board. But some people still were stuck in that showy mentality that's really intoxicating. It's really, you know, like once you kind of go through that, you chase it a little bit. I did miss it too. And I missed the fanfare and the pressure of the show and all of that. But at the same time, I knew that it wasn't sustainable. You know, like we weren't in that business. And I think that that business is very controlled by the luxury conglomerates that can actually do really beautiful shows and they can outdo each other. You know, for a small brand like Tacoon, you know, we were really healthy, but I would say we were still small in comparison to, you know, like an LV, obviously, but, you know, would not be able to compete with something like that. And so I wanted to figure out our own path to success.
How did you think about price point in this process?
It was one of the first things that I thought about, you know, just because I also, for, you know, my own personal wardrobe, I don't spend as much as I used to spend, let's say, you know, like, I mean, I was a fashion victim, you know, it was easy to spend $500-$600 on a pair of shoes. Sweaters were like $1,200, $1,300, like it was no big deal. But, you know, I think that nowadays we all have more options for fashion than ever before. So for me, it's really thinking through how we can be more considerate of the world and of consumption, but also all of my friends too, who can clearly afford $1,200, $1,300 sweaters, they're not buying those anymore. They don't think about that anymore. Anything above $500, they're thinking, do I need it?
Yeah.
So I think that the world is in a different place. And you can get good qualities for a cheaper price.
Yeah.
And for me, it was challenging trying to figure that out because, you know, you're so used to buying $50 a yard fabrics from Italy and from France, and the manufacturing cost is double that. So like you can see how the profit margin gets eaten away. But for me, it was really just about putting my head down and problem solve a little bit. You know, you can find fabrics that are cheaper, that are great, like beautiful cottons from Italy that are less than 10 euros a meter. It's about how you use that fabric and design into that fabric that makes it magical. You know, if you take the fanfare and the showiness out of things, like you can focus on design better, I think.
Well, it's a little bit like fashion magazine folks, for those who worked in print like us, remember the days of like a caption is harder to write mm-hmm. than a full-length feature story because you just don't have as much to work with. But so it's really satisfying when you get it right. Like if you could use any material in the world that cost anything you want, sure, that could be nice. But like if you could do it really well, it's something that you can afford and that the customer can afford, like the Tetris of all of that is another level of rewarding because you actually had to try harder and be smarter about it.
Listen, you can talk to me about caption writing all day long. You're right. Like, that's exactly the discipline that I'm bringing to close now. It's really, how do you input all of these things that you want to get into a garment in a way that balances quality and price point? You know, maybe you buy more yardage to save on the cost per yard, and then you make that the centerpiece of your collection. There are creative ways that you can cut and splice.
I love it. Okay, can we talk about the summer drop? Because yes. It is so fun and so wearable, which I adore because it's like the shopper in me is very excited about it. Can you tell me a little bit about your inspiration and the vision for it? Because I feel like the last 2 years, it's been difficult for folks to really tap into their creativity because so many of us have been stuck at home or in one place, mm-hmm. like we don't have all of the references and touch points that we did pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about how this process was also different for you.
Yeah, so for me, it was escape completely. We relaunched Tacoon as a capsule elevated essentials collection right before the pandemic. It was really about just like beautifully tailored, simple pieces, work to weekend kind of pieces, right? And so we also had loungewear in there right before the pandemic.
Brilliant.
We had no idea, obviously, but we were lucky enough to have developed and produced those pieces. So during the pandemic, those were the only pieces that went. Anything else was not desired. So when we found success in the lounge category, we're like, okay, great. Like this is going to sort of like ride us through the pandemic. But I know that at the end of that tunnel, I'm going to be so sick of it. Like I really need to figure out something else to give to the customer and for myself, because I'm not wearing this every single day for the rest of my life. So that was the catalyst for this escape, which I was sort of like looking back at old Tacoon pieces and Tacoon ideas. And I think one of the things that stuck with me, and it's a comment that I get over and over and over again, is Tacoon, like your sort of chic, bohemian, feminine, city, cool girl pieces. Like we need more of those pieces. And so that was perfectly for me in my head time for summer of 22. As people are feeling more comfortable, people want to escape. And I think you see in the trend too in fashion where resort wear is really coming up. And so I think we're timed perfectly with the pieces that we have.
Do you have favorite pieces? Do you have any thoughts on how they should be styled? Mm-hmm. Or do you ever see something like walking down the street and you think, oh my gosh, I would have never put that together in that way. That looks phenomenal.
The thing about my pieces is I design with styling in mind, just because I know that that's always like the conundrum for a lot of women. And so for me, I like to design into pieces that feel as if you've already styled that piece together. So one of the pieces that I love is a long tank dress. It's in a white eyelet cotton fabric, and it has enough details where it feels as if you styled like a tank top and a skirt together in one piece. So you can literally just put it on and go. And it's one of those dresses where you can wear that in a summer day in the city, like with sneakers, and feel really cool, or you can take it to a resorty destination with sandals, and that feels also very cool. So I love the ability for a piece of garment to be able to transform depending on the locale.
Chameleon wear. I love it. And I think that's so important too. I have the personal thing that I run in my head. It's like, do I have three different places or occasions where I could wear something? Mm-hmm. And then do I have three pieces in my closet that I could style it with, mm-hmm. just to see, like, is this a good fit? And so to your point, when you're like, oh yeah, we could do it with sneakers in the city, and you could do it with a sandal and do it here, and we could dress it up with this or whatever it may be. Like, it's an exercise that women really run these days. And the fact that you are already thinking about that is so smart.
There's another dress that we did. It's a printed tulip floral dress. I call it the convertible dress because it can convert from sort of like a muumuu kaftan for those days where you feel like you just want something easy to throw over a bikini, to like, if you want to sexy it up, it can convert into something that's a bit more form-fitting to your body. So these kinds of tricks to garments, I love. And I love to kind of do it in ways that are novel and mm-hmm. sort of like hit on trends that you might want to be in like the next season.
Love that. So I'm curious about, from your point of view, what some of the foundational staples are that everyone should have in their wardrobe.
I think that you should have a button down. Mm-hmm. I love classic ones that are men's-y looking, but I also love ones that are bohemian. You know, people interpret the word bohemian differently, but for me, it's sort of like this light femininity with eyeletting detail. I like to cut that with a very city cool girl vibe. And so like a collarless button down that we have in a white eyelet that's slightly oversized is also like a classic staple, especially for the summertime. I think that like a classic stovepipe or straight leg high rise pant is always an essential. I love dresses, I love skirts, but I think that pants are always super practical.
Excellent. Okay, great. So one of the things that I have always loved about everything that you create is that you have such a range, and that we have seen so many different things from you, but that there's a cohesiveness to it and an ease to it. I'm curious about how you're thinking about the future, because you've done lots of different things. Mm-hmm. You have lots of different creative extensions. What do you want? Like, what's your dream? Where do you want to go?
You know, I just want to be doing what I do for a long time. And that means I want the things that I make, the brands that I work with, to have longevity. You know, I want to see 20 years down the road that Tacoon is still relevant, that Tacoon is still growing and it doesn't date. You know, like, I never want to be that designer that's just gone. Like, I think that that's important for me. And I think that not only in fashion design, but in other spaces, like, I think I'm so lucky to be able to work in a space where I can be creative and make people happy, you know? And I think that that's, to me, the most important thing, to be timeless 30 years from now.
I love that. So any style advice for our listeners who are avid shoppers and who really love expert opinions on things?
For me, it's quality. You can get quality at good prices. Like, don't touch anything that feels like it's going to burn. As I get older too, I just want like quality pieces that live in the closet for more than 2 years. You know, like, yeah. I really think that that's important. And so I'm really of the mindset that clothes age really well. And so I think buy quality. And what I do is, when I see something, I walk away from it. And if I want it the next day, then I know that it's worth it. So it cuts off the impulse purchase.
That is an excellent test, and one that I have run myself many a time. A friend once said, like, if you're putting, should I buy this, on social media, it's because you're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And that is like an obvious sign of like, yeah, you actually should. But mm-hmm. I do it too, where I'm like, do I really want it, or do I just want something? And if that next day happens and you're like, oh, I'm still thinking about it, that's a really good sign.
Totally.
Well, Tacoon, thank you so much for your time. I have to say, I was particularly excited about this interview because there's no way you would know this, but I interned at Bazaar when I was in grad school and when you were working there. And I used to deliver copy to you when it was going around the edit process. And it was a really intimidating environment in many ways. And you were always so kind and human. And that is literally from 2002. I remember it.
Oh, my God.
From that time on, it's really been a pleasure watching your career and the fact that here you were, like, epicenter of everything that was cool, and you were nice to the intern. So just wanted to share that with you.
It's so nice to hear that. So that's the other advice that I give to everyone. Just be nice to people.
Because here we are 20 years later.
Exactly.
And I remember it like it was yesterday. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
A huge thank you to Takoon for sitting down with me today. Make sure to subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And while you're there, I'd also be so grateful if you would rate and review us. If you have any guest suggestions or any other feedback, drop us a line at podcast@whowhatwhere.com, or you can find us on social at Who What Wear. See you next Wednesday on Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr. This episode was produced by Hillary Kerr and Olivia Capoletti. Editing is by Natalie Thurman and Treehouse Recording in Los Angeles, California. Our music is by Jonathan Leahy.